From the haunted mesas to the forgotten canyons, this is the Dark Canyon Chronicles, whispers from the shadows of the Southwest. I'm Steven, and together we'll cross the veil into the stories of the strange, the hidden, and the haunted. Tonight on the Dark Canyon Chronicles, we welcome a guest whose life and career have placed her at a remarkable crossroads between history and mystery. Tracy spent more than 30 years as a museum curator and spent time as a field archaeologist, connecting with all the landscapes of the Four Corners region. Along the way, she has experienced unexplained sightings in the skies above Dolores, encounters that felt like poltergeist activity across different stages of life, a childhood Ouija session that seemed to foreshadow history, and moments in museums and everyday spaces where the past felt unexpectedly present. Tonight, Tracy Murphy joins us to share stories, reflections, and the questions that remain when professional stewardship of the past intersects with personal encounters with the unknown. Welcome to the Dark Canyon Chronicles.
Thank you, Stephen and Mark.
Yeah, welcome, Tracy.
Happy to be here in the beautiful KSJD studios.
Here we are.
In the corner of Main and Market in downtown Cortez.
And Mark, where are you joining us from?
I am joining from the big flatlands over here by the airport in Durango.
There you go. Oh. Where there is sights to see in the sky.
Definitely.
Every night, unless we have clouds.
So, and I shared your notes, Tracy, with Mark, and Tracy and I were talking beforehand, Mark, I think this could easily end up being a two-episode show.
Oh, we could do.
Sounds great to me.
We could do a dozen.
We could just start a whole new podcast, just,
Right?
The Tracy Chronicles.
The life of a spooky girl.
So, first of all, was there a point, I know Mark and I have talked about this before, and, there was definitely a point in my life where I felt like there was something going on that was different from me than the rest of people. So, was there a point, Tracy, in your life where you first realized that your life seemed to be more intersecting with the unexplained, the paranormal? Was there a point where you said, something's going on with me that's maybe a little different?
Yeah. Yes. A couple of things pop into mind. Like I was telling you earlier, I did not grow up in a haunted house, but I was very interested from a very early age. I remember being in second or third grade, and do you remember the Scholastic Book Fairs?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love those.
And I went down the Hans Holzer rabbit hole pretty significantly. I read everything I could on anything paranormal, and still to this day have a book. It was a fiction book called As You Are Now, So Once Was I. Mm. And it was about two young people in the English countryside during World War II who had a ghost friend. And from that point on, I was in it, in whatever immediate in my face way, or just trying to consume and absorb everything I could. I can't tell you why that was the case, but I didn't come from an especially spooky family, though my sister might disagree at this point. But I definitely, at an early age, had an interest that was not shared by many people until at least I got into junior high school.
Do you feel like you sought after it, or it sought after you?
I think initially I was drawn to the unexplained. And that led me into a lifetime of some large and many, 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 many like one-off experiences that you just couldn't really explain. I'd say I started reading about, you know, ghosts and poltergeists and all of that type of thing. And then eventually started having my own encounters and experiences that I just, there was only one of them, which is a story that's going to be too long for us to tell. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you another time, that scared me to the core, even more than the story I told you earlier.
Okay.
Like terrified me. But most of the time it's always been sort of like, oh, hi, there you are. You're here. Something is happening. Huh? I don't scare easily. So I think I was drawn to the subject and then have just spent a lifetime exploring it. Very fascinated in all aspects of it. Mm-hmm. My experience, you know, I don't have any experiences with Bigfoot.
Oh, man. Okay.
You know.
All right. We're ending this show. I saw Mark just walk away.
I'm out.
So I have heard, I do have secondhand stories from the area, but I don't have personal experiences with that.
Maybe the question would be, are you open to having an experience?
Yes. I really love being, you know, being in the woods and being outdoors is medicine, and I don't ever want an experience that keeps me from that. So yep. I would say I would like to have an experience the same way I saw my first mountain lion, which was through my car windshield. That would be great. They can walk across the road in front of me. That would be awesome. But I don't want to be in a tent or hiking anywhere and have anything happen.
I've been there, done that. I understand.
Because I want to be able to go in the – I don't want to be scared in the places that I love.
Yeah, maybe capture the awe of the moment.
Yeah, I'd like to know if they're real. And I do think that – I've heard dozens and dozens and dozens of encounters from around the world that make me think that something is happening. And I have 2 degrees. You know, my educational background is in anthropology and archaeology, and the anthropological aspect of the paranormal, like why and how people encounter the things they do, is really fascinating to me. And that definitely plays into the Sasquatch encounters that people relate. I do think something is going on. I don't know what it is because I haven't encountered it at all. Well, I don't know what's going on with the things I have encountered. So,
right. Turn on the news or whatever, right?
I don't think we get to know. I'm just going to put that out front.
Do you think, and I'll go both ways with this, do you think your background with this kind of thing and being open to this and having these experiences had anything to do with the direction you went in your career, or maybe vice versa? Do you know what I'm, you know, like?
I don't think my interest in anthropology and archaeology was because of my interest in the paranormal. I didn't connect those until I was in it.
Did it make you a better archaeologist, anthropologist, having the openness to that? Was that, do you think that?
Well, I'm going to say yes, but I don't actually know the answer. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
You'd have to ask my former colleagues. I'm retired now, so like, I don't know. There's a few exceptions where I did share experiences with a few coworkers. But for a lot of my experiences, I don't know, 50-50, some of them I shared. There were people that were safe people. I could say, hey, this thing happened. And they'll be like, and they would say, oh, yeah, I have something I can share. You know, like there would be calm, like we could reinforce each other's experiences sometimes. And then there were other things that were just like, I, you know, whatever the circumstances were, I was keeping it to myself. I don't know if it made me a better museum curator or archaeologist. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, I would wonder too in there, you know, like one of the things that kind of drives my pursuit here, I will call it, you know, is just the question, why not? You know, mm-hmm. which helps me keep the door open
mm-hmm.
In my thinking and possibility, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, as I'm listening and I'm thinking, you know, you were a museum curator and I've never worked in a museum. I've never, you know, I've gone through them, of course, but, you know, I wonder what, you know, did you find, I heard you talk about your colleagues and I'm wondering, organizationally, do museums, I guess everyone's different, but are they open to, you know, the why not kind of avenue, or is it more, this is how it is?
So first thing I'm going to say is that in my opinion, there isn't a museum out there that is not haunted in some way.
Sure.
Whether the people that are there every day experience it or admit to it doesn't matter. I have not been in a museum that I, especially ones that I've worked in, that were not. I can't imagine. Maybe the Los Angeles Science and Industry Museum might not be. I don't know. And in terms of museums being open to it, it really depends. There are museums out there that host, you know, ghost tours and paranormal investigations. They're totally into it. And there are others that absolutely, nope. That's not happening. And so it really just depends. And, you know, and in the museum world, there's, the, you know, there's all types of museums. I worked in archaeological and ethnographic and fine art museums. There are museums like the Montezuma History Museum that's very specific to our, you know, settler history. There are science and industry museums. There's postal museums. So, I mean, there are toothpick museums, believe it or not.
writing that down. Where's that?
I actually, an old boss
by the dental floss museum.
Yeah, an old boss of mine actually found there was literally a toothpick museum somewhere, and she was, when we were training interns at one point, she was talking to them about whether they thought that was a valid type of museum.
Well, we won't go into this, but you know, you've heard me talk, Mark. My show that I did in Seattle was in a museum. The studio was in a museum. And it was totally haunted, and all the staff and volunteers had stories. And believe me, I had stories too. So I haven't even got into the second paragraph here yet. So Mark knows how fast these shows can go. They're just So let's jump into I know one of Mark's favorite. You know, we're going to go into the UAP, or as I like to call them, UFO sightings that you had in Dolores. And I originally, for some reason, I always go to nighttime. And what I've heard from Tracy is that's not the case here, correct?
One of them. All right. Do you want me to just launch in?
Yes, please.
All right. Yep. So one of them, they both happened in 2006. In from my backyard, I was sitting in my hot tub, and I highly recommend people who like to look at the sky at night to get a hot tub, because it's much more comfortable than sure. anything else you can imagine. The first time was June 2006. It was right after the solstice, so it was light pretty late. It was not full dark. The sun was setting. You could still see the sunset shining up the Dolores River Valley. So I don't know, 8:30-ish, I'm guessing. I don't quite remember now. I'm sitting in my hot tub. I am facing. So I live on the hillside of town. So I was sitting in my hot tub facing the direction of the river, which would be south. Yes.
Right.
And I'm just relaxing. And I see two metallic spheres. One was above and closer to me than the other one was. So they, as I'm showing Stephen here, one was higher and in front, and the other one was slightly lower and behind. And they were, if anyone has looked at the videos that Sean Kirkpatrick released during the congressional hearings a few years ago for the Baghdad spheres, that is what I saw. When I saw the video of the Baghdad spheres, I was like, that's what I saw. That's right. What I saw. Yep. But there were two of them. Well, I saw two. And they were tracking up the river valley, so from west to east. Right, they looked, from my vantage point, they looked like they were right above the river. They were higher than the top of the river, the canyon rim.
Right.
And if we were at my house, I could be like, they were right there. And I estimate they moved in a perfectly straight line. No sound, no lights, no contrails, no anything. They were perfectly round, metallic, like brushed steel looking, so like dull silver spheres. And
they weren't reflecting anything?
They were reflecting the light of the setting sun.
Okay. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. And that's what caught my attention.
And they were similar size. So
they were exactly the same size.
So they were the distance away from each other. They seemed the same distance.
There is a possibility that they were attached because one was slightly below and behind from my vantage point, the other one. But I didn't see any evidence that they were attached. And I think they were two separate, but they were moving at exactly the same speed. And I estimate, just based on the speed of cars driving up Highway 145, I think they were probably going 30, 35 miles an hour. And I saw them coming from the west, and I watched them, and then they went behind a tree in my backyard, and I went, what? And I stood up in the hot tub so I could see better. And they came out from behind the tree and just kept going up the river valley until I couldn't see them anymore. Mm. At that time, I did not have a smartphone. I did not have a phone that had camera. It was 2006. Didn't have anything like that. I'm in my hot tub. I just went, huh, I hope somebody else saw that. And I sat back down and resumed soaking, kind of going, what was that? I mean, and in my interest in things that are unexplained, that was really not a topic that was super in the forefront of my mind. I didn't discount things, but it wasn't like, oh, you know, I really want to see this. And you know, it was just, it happened. I have really good, very old friends who are all astrophysicists, and solar physicists and that type of thing. And I wrote down what happened. I emailed them and said, please tell me what I saw. And they're all very much the type of people that are like, these things don't exist at all. Like, I don't, you know. And when I reached out to them, they basically, I was expecting them to say, oh, it was a weather balloon. And that was the first thing they said was it was not. They're like, that's not. And I've seen weather balloons in Dolores in the last year. Like, it was not anything I've ever seen before. And they basically said, we can't explain what it is you saw. We can tell you that it wasn't a weather balloon and it wasn't something that we're aware of in our, you know, arsenal of U.S. military or aviation things. I did submit reports to MUFON. And
you saw this again, right?
I saw something different.
Okay.
I saw.
I don't know what you're doing there, Mark, but
we can hear you.
It sounds like you're.
Sorry about that. I was crinkling something.
Anyway, I don't know. I don't know what you know what you're doing there, but we're picking it up. Anyway, go ahead with the. So
the following November, I am again, and this one is really weird. But since at the time, I was just like, I don't have any idea. Since then, I've heard similar reports. I was again sitting in the hot tub. I was facing west. Yeah, I think I was facing west, laying back in the hot tub, looking up at the sky. This was at night. It was full dark. And I was looking at the stars. And I saw what looked like a gray oblong, almost like a short oblong cigar shape, but it looked like a gray fuzzy cloud moving from the southeast to the northwest. And in the Dolores, and also want to say it was a clear night. There were no other clouds. There was no wind. And the prevailing wind in Dolores, unless there's a big storm coming in, is typically east-west or west-east. It goes up and down the river valley. And this was moving diagonally from that. And it was, it looked lower than what you would expect a cloud moving quickly in the sky to look like. And it didn't morph. It, like, you know, a cloud might, like one end might become a different shape because of the wind. It was like this long oval gray thing that looked fuzzy, like a cloud kind of looks around the edges. And I watched it, and it wasn't moving super fast. And I watched it until it disappeared, and I had enough time to think, what the heck is that? Did I just see another weird thing in the sky? Because it was weird. It was not moving in the right direction. If it had been moving east-west, west-east, I wouldn't have given it another thought. But it was moving diagonally across the river valley in a way that the wind does not blow very often. And I couldn't find any, you know, after all these things happen, I start to like poke around a little bit and see. And it took me until a couple of years ago before I heard anyone talk about things that looked like clouds moving in strange ways. But there have been a few reports like that. So that one, I don't know what any of it was.
Right.
I will say I did file reports with MUFON.
Which stands for, what is it?
Mutual UFO Network.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, Mutual UFO Network. And they sent me a form to fill out, and then a woman named Davina called me about it, just talked to me about it. And then a few years later, another gentleman called me. And the only thing he asked me was regarding the spheres. He wanted to know if I was located near a military base. And so this would have been 2007 or 8, a few years later. It wasn't immediate. He asked if I lived near a military base, and I said the only one that I know of would be Kirkland Air Force Base outside of Albuquerque. That would be the closest one, I think. There might be closer, but that was all I could come up with. And he said that he didn't have any interest in the weird cloud thing. Whatever. It was weird, but he was interested in the spheres, because he said that they tend to be correlated with military installations. And I went, okay, that's interesting. Maybe they are some kind of military thing, or they're interested in military things. I don't know. And then, of course, I saw the Baghdad Sphere video a couple of years ago and went, oh, look at that. That's what I saw. Exactly what I saw, except I saw two of them.
Mark, I know you've seen some stuff. Have you seen anything like that? The cigar shaped.
I haven't seen the spheres or the cigar shaped. Mine are more nighttime lights. But you know, one of the things that I'm thinking of is also like down in New Mexico. Like, there's a bunch of Department of Energy stuff down there too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of the things I've read over the years about, you know, when there's they see UAPs or UFOs. I guess I'm old school, but you know, that they see them at places where there's nuclear energy stuff, there's nuclear testing, weapons, things like that. And you know, I was talking to Steve way back, but it's like, you know, if I was coming and checking out a new planet and you see, all right, here's this guy with a plow with a horse, and over here you have this nuclear power plant, probably going to go check out the nuclear power plant, you know, like that's probably more peak civilization stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one thought that I had. The other thing too, in terms of bases, and I think you're right about Kirtland, is, you know, you go over the other side of Utah and you get into Nevada, and there's some stuff over there and a lot of big testing areas and things like that. And I know that's a little bit away. You know, when I hear the MUFON guy saying, you know, are you near a military base? You know,
Define near.
I mean, these beings might be coming from another, you know, solar system. Like,
well, and we've seen, I mean, in this area, we've seen, you know, fighter jets doing maneuvers from Kirkland or wherever. I mean, probably take some 10 minutes to fly over here. So, yeah, I just mentioned that because that was interesting information. The fuzzy cigar-shaped cloud thing, like I said, I've seen some mentions of it. I've heard people speculate that it might be like a cloaking type thing. I don't, like I said at the beginning of the show, I don't know what any of this is. All I know is what I've seen.
So didn't you say that you reported to MUFON, and then they kind of got lost, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and it could just be user error, though I part of my museum job was database administration. It was, at one point, I could find it in their database. And then a year or two ago, I just decided to look it up again just to refresh my memory, and I couldn't find it. And so I don't, it could just be that they've parsed out.
Sure.
Or I don't know, whatever. But when you type in, you know, UFO sighting Southwest Colorado, I would think that that would show up.
Mm-hmm.
But
I've never even been on that website before.
Yeah.
I haven't either.
Yeah.
I went on it earlier today just to see what I could find. And I didn't have enough time to really dig into it. But it kind of looked like maybe they had a tier of, like, if you become a member, you can search these. Oh. You can, like, they may have it changed it a little bit, you know, monetized something.
It's always about the money.
I do just
subscription service.
Yeah, I do know though. I just will throw this out here because it's regional. A year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, I was seeing a lot of like the local Facebook groups mentioning lights on the Mesa Verde escarpment that they were seeing. And maybe that's something that Mark is similar to some of the things that Mark has seen. They were just seeing lights like floating up along the western escarpment of Mesa Verde and drifting off, flying up into the sky. And they didn't sound like they were like Chinese balloons or, you know, anything like that. But yeah, those are so that's my two UFO, UAP things.
Did that change? I mean, I always ask this question of, did that change how you look at things when you saw
it? Well, it definitely made me more interested. And it wasn't that I wasn't interested in that before, but it made me more interested in what else people were experiencing. You know, I'd heard, like, I lived in Flagstaff, Arizona during the Phoenix Lights incident. So I was familiar with, like, the Phoenix Lights. And I forget the name of the logger who had an abduction experience on the Mogollon Rim in Arizona.
Fire in the Sky.
That guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was familiar with those. Mm-hmm. And I lived in Arizona during those years. And so I was, you know, I was like, oh, that's weird. That's interesting. But once I saw my own things and I know what I saw, it definitely made me pay more attention.
Sure.
And listen to more people talk about their experiences and read more about it, and realize that I am very, very much not interested in having a closer encounter. Mm-hmm. I don't have any interest.
Mm-hmm. I do. Please take me.
Kind of like the mountain lion Bigfoot scenario. Right. It's like, you know, if you're on the other side of my windshield.
Sitting in the hot tub is great. I can watch all
day. If you're up there, just don't be all dropping into my backyard, please.
Yeah, during the pandemic, I had a bag packed and I would sit outside, but they never came and got me.
Oh, darn it.
You know, I would imagine, too, after this event, like, when you get in your hot tub, you probably look up a bit more.
Well, it's a great place to watch meteor showers from. And there's one star in particular that I watch from towards the east I know it's just a star, but it does kind of change colors and pulse a little bit more. And, you know, it's good to stargaze. You're not going to see anything if you don't look up.
Yep.
Exactly. Unless you're looking for, like, bugs or worms or something. Well, then you got to look down.
And I'm a fan of all of those things, too. I collect rocks and I like bugs.
So as we're over halfway through, which is the way this thing works. So I'm going to pick and choose a little bit.
Please do.
You know, I'm going to go away from, you know, to my favorite subject, which is ghosts and poltergeists and all that stuff. And so let's jump. I'm gonna come back, but I shared with Mark the experience that you had when you were a young gal around 12, 13 with the Ouija board. Yeah, let's hear that story.
Okay. Well, here I am, little Tracy, 13 years old, living in Long Beach, California. Hanging out with my best friend at the time. I think we were in 7th or 8th grade. I'll call her Connie. Mm-hmm. And I'm not in touch with her anymore. We lost touch, went to different high schools. So, and she did eventually become an evangelical Christian. I don't know if our experience played into that or not.
Definitely could have.
We were typical 13-year-olds. My mom had purchased me the standard Parker Brothers Ouija board, and it was summer, and she would hang out at my house and we would play with it, and it was very, very typical young teenage girl stuff, you know, asking, like, who likes, you know, does Mike like me, you know, this type of thing. Silly stuff. One day, and it was either late August 1975 or very early September 1975, she and I were playing like we usually did, asking your standard questions, and the planchette started flying across the board very quickly, which was different, spelling out, this is so weird to say, I mean, I'm telling you is one thing, but, like, we're recording this. It started spelling out president killed over and over. Whoa. And over again. Not varying the words, just those two words, president killed.
It's funny you picked this show to tell weird stuff, just saying that.
I know.
Yeah, we're kind of weird. But
I'm sure the listeners are just like, I can't believe she's telling weird things.
No, they'll believe me. Our listeners will
will atone.
This all tracks.
I don't even know. Anyway,
so it happened multiple times.
Yeah,
in a row.
It happened multiple, and I couldn't tell you, like, you know, it was. I'm 63 now. I was 13, so I don't know, like 50 years ago.
Right.
I don't know how many times, but it was adamant. It spelled it out over, and I would say probably 4 or 5 times.
Wow.
To the point where we got the message.
Right.
And I was looking at Connie, like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm not doing anything. Are you doing this? And I'm like, no, like, we're 13-year-old girls. It's 1975.
Typical Ouija board scene from every horror movie where everybody's blaming everybody else
for what's happening. Yeah, totally. And literally, like, the last thing I cared about was the president or politics. I was interested in boys and music and horses, and I didn't care. And we looked at each other and kind of, you know, fussed at each other back and forth about, are you doing that? No. Are you doing that? No. And then we were like, oh no, what is happening? And we're at my house, and we went to my mom and said, hey, this Ouija board spelled this out. Like, what do we do? Because even when it was happening, I can still remember the feeling in my body of like, we have to do something. Like, the president is dead or is going to be dead. But I'm a 13-year-old kid. I don't know. Like, what? And so we went and told my mom, and she just, like, we're like, what should we do? Like, should we call the police? And she just was like, you girls, like, just go ride your bikes. Like, go out and go to the beach. Go do a thing. Like, whatever. Quit bugging me. I'm going grocery shopping. And so we let it go. We didn't play with the board anymore. At all.
Ever?
Ever. A few days later, on September 5th, 1975, you can Google it, Squeaky Fromm of the Manson family fame tried to assassinate Gerald Ford. And I freaked out. That was probably the second, like, what the heck is this? What is happening? Thing that happened in my life that was like, I couldn't explain it. And Connie and I did talk about it. Basically, you know, oh my God, this Ouija board thing. And he isn't dead though, you know, but like somebody tried to kill him. And also being in Southern California, all things Manson family were very scary and very, even at that point, on our minds. So the fact that it was a Manson family person was also a little freaky to me. Just an aside.
Pretty legit, yeah.
I mean, you know, all of Southern California was pretty traumatized, especially little kids who didn't really understand what was going on. But anyway, so she and I did talk about it, but again, like, what do we do with this?
Yeah,
and we don't do anything with it.
And, you know, my first question is, like, after your mom watching this on the news, her running down the hallway to you and saying, you know, like, oh my God, you what's going on here? But no.
I'm gonna ask my sister if she did text me back, but not about. I asked her a different question. Yeah. I'm going to ask her if she remembers anything, but I just remember us all just kind of going, whoa, that was weird. And like I was mentioning to you earlier, Stephen, like my mom was very much a like, wow, that was weird. Moving on. Like, did you see it? No, you didn't. Like, just moving on. And I took that Ouija board and walked it out to the trash can on the curb and threw it away. And I haven't touched one since because I don't need to be predicting.
Yeah.
I don't need that thing telling me anything like that. That is just not going to happen. So, yeah, that was my, did I forget anything from that? I don't think so.
Mark, what's your take on that one?
Well, that's pretty amazing. I'm going to be truthful here. Like, Ouija boards freak me out. I'm not going to lie. And, you know, like, hearing that, and I'm just having this little picture of, you know, we got to tell somebody, we got to tell the police. And, you know, imagine being a Secret Service agent and getting a call from a 13-year-old girl and like, hey, my Ouija board told me, you know, like,
and just okay. Just so you know, that was not lost on me even then. Like, why we went to my mom, it was like, what do we do? Do we call the police? And I even knew, like, we're in like seventh grade. Like, what is this?
Right. This is ridiculous. I mean, imagine maybe the Secret Service has a file cabinet that's all Ouija board claims, you know, like, I don't know. That's
well, maybe somebody will hear, maybe one of them will hear this podcast and like, you know, we'll hear the story and reach out and be like, girl, you should have called us. Cause you know, that was how we got a lot of tips. But, again, in the moment, I was like, why us? Like, what are we going to, I don't have a driver's license.
I mean, even an adult's not going to be taken seriously. Mark, I'm a big Stephen King fan, and he's written a couple books that kind of fall into this. The Dead Zone, which is, a guy shaking hands with a guy that's running for Senate. And he, as soon as he touches the guy's hand, he sees a premonition of where this guy's going to become president in nuclear war. And then he wrote this book called 11/22/63, which is the date of Kennedy's assassination. And the book is about this guy that's able to go back in time and try to take out Oswald before he ends up killing the president. And both of these books, both of those books is people not believing, you know, obviously having a hard time believing what these two people are freaking out about trying to do, you know, and I can imagine a 13-year-old girl, you know, calling up and, you know,
and what could have been, what was doing that to the board? Like,
was talking to you about it?
Yeah. Like, I were we the only people in anywhere that something decided to like, okay, they got a Ouija board. This is important. I'm going to get the message to them. Like, what?
Were there Ouija boards across the world being the same, similar something?
Like, they all were telling the message, the same message. Like,
it's just one of the weirdest, I don't know. I've had a lot of... Like I said, we could spend many hours talking about weird things, but
that's a good story.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
that is.
Great. I'm happy to tell it. Actually, I haven't. It's not that I don't tell people that story, but I don't. You know, like, hey, I'm Tracy. Do you want to hear my Ouija board story from when I was 13?
That would be me. I'd be telling it all over.
Well, I know.
I bet Stephen has a few. I went to college in Gettysburg and.
Ooh.
We had guys, I was, of course, in a fraternity, which, you know, I've grown since then. But we had guys who wanted to go out on the battlefields and, like, with a Ouija board. And I'm like, man, leave those guys alone. They've had a hard time already.
Yeah.
You know, like, let them rest.
That'd be a hard pass for me.
Hard pass.
So Tracy, tell, and you can connect it into a bigger story, but... Talk about. I want you to tell Mark and the audience about your bed.
Oh,
is it a Ouija board?
No, it's not a Ouija board. I'm going to say this is the first thing that happened to me that was unexplainable. I think I was around 10 or 11. My little sister thinks I was a little bit older, but I I think she was thinking about the Ouija board.
And she's 2 years younger.
She's 2 years younger than me, and we shared a bedroom. And I was, like I said, I was a spooky girl, for better or worse. And at that point in my life, I would say worse, because I was pretty scared. I didn't need to have the lights on in the bedroom, but I did need. I did not feel safe. I was scared of vampires. I was scared of the Manson family coming to get me. I was scared of, like I said, I'd been reading Hans Holzer. I was pretty sure that there were things that were going to get me. And then my dad played a trick on me and banged on the other side of the wall next to my bed one night when I was sleeping in, and that really sent me through the roof. So I was scared.
Mark shaking his head.
You know, my dad was just being like, oh, listen, she's all being all spooky and reading ghost stories. Well, I'll show her. And I didn't know it at the time. But anyway, whether that plays into what happened, I don't know. It was just, when I think about this incident, that is all part of it. I was in bed. My sister had, and it was just your typical twin bed, single twin bed, no bed frame. My sister had, you know, had a, I don't know. It didn't have a bed frame, but it was a mattress and a box spring. That's the word. And she, my little sister, had the same thing across the room from me. And it was, my parents were asleep. It was middle of the night, and I hear my sister yelling, "Oh my God, Tracy! Oh my God, your bed!" And I was like, "What?" And the end of my bed slammed to the ground. My sister had rolled over, woken up, rolled over, and saw the end of my bed levitating off the ground. And I've since asked her, I've confirmed this with her in the past few months. Like, did this really happen? And she was like, oh, yeah, it did. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, how far off the ground was it? And she's like, a foot, 2 feet. Like, and when she.
And this was one end?
Just one end. It was just one end. Okay. It wasn't the whole bed. Okay. The head, it was the foot end of the bed. And I felt it go down and just smacked the table. You listeners heard that. I felt it hit the ground, but she was like, "Your bed." And I was like, "What?" And it went boom down. To this day, I've always just told myself that that was me. That was just, you know, poltergeists are, one theory is that, you know, it's very common for them to be associated with, you know, young people in that sort of 10 to 15 age range. And some people believe that it's that actual individual that's affecting the chaos that happens around them. That was the only thing that ever happened poltergeist in that era. And like I mentioned to Stephen earlier, like, I grew up in that house and I don't remember weird stuff happening. If I talk to my sister, she might inform me something differently that I don't remember or I never knew.
But, so briefly, and this is something we have not talked about, Mark, on this show. Explain a little bit more about what you mean by that, like the energy, not spiritual related, not ghost related, but your own energy creating like an actual poltergeist type experience.
Were you directing that question to Mark?
You.
To me?
No, to you.
To me?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it, but you know, everything is energy. Mm-hmm. And I have been told that in different time periods of people's lives, you have changes happening hormonally, for example, that can cause emotional feelings. You know, having all different kinds of feelings about things or that are, you know, energetic. And a lot of the poltergeist encounters that I've read that were more extreme, it seemed like there were, you know, individuals that were very angry. And so things go flying across the room or, you know, all the pots and pans stack into a pyramid and they'll go crashing down or whatever. And I've had it explained to me by a friend who I trust as much as anyone knows anything about any of this, that we can affect our environment without realizing it physically through our energy, through our anxiety, through our fear, through our anger, through, you know, strong emotions. And that I was at that age and my dad had freaked me out. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it at the time that it was him. It wasn't the same night, but it was in that same time frame, mm-hmm. Where he had scared, he had banged on the wall. And I thought for sure that it was, you know, an entity. And it wasn't, it was my dad. But like my emotional state was freaked out. Mm-hmm. I did not sleep. I was a very sleep deprived, you know, fifth or sixth grader.
And it kind of goes to the part of where we don't know. I mean, we use very little of our capabilities and understand what we're capable of, right? Mark, any feedback?
Well, yeah. I'm kind of thinking about. I'm bouncing back and forth. You know, like I keep seeing Carol Ann from the first Poltergeist, you know, movie, and I'm like, did she make the maggots go on the chicken or, you know, something like that? But then I'm thinking about my buddy Bill, who I watched him knock somebody off a bar stool with using empty force, you know, almost like a Jedi trick or something. And I mean, he wasn't trying to hurt her or anything. It just happened and she blew off her chair as he's walking by. And it's like, whoa. And, you know, the energy stuff, I'm not opposed to it at all. Like, I don't fully know, and I think we can do a lot of things when we get like a hyper focusedness about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I'm still kind of percolating around just generating that much energy or concentration about energy. You know, I'm trying to piece that together. I mean, I'd like to do that with my dishes.
Wouldn't we all?
You know,
and I'm gonna give you the old 5 minute signal here, Marcus, and I'm just gonna remind you all that we are supported. The Dark Canyon Chronicles comes. We have great support from United Country Blue Skies Homes and Lands with locations in Cortez, Mancos, and Durango. Blue Sky Homes and Land is a locally owned real estate agency whose community-minded brokers provide extensive local real estate expertise with national marketing tools for their clients. You can explore current listings and learn more at blueskyhomesandland.com. Thanks, Blue Sky, for supporting Dark Canyon Chronicles. And, you know, we'll take money from anybody, but they're a good group of folks.
No, they're good people. And boy, I just think, you know, they really do. They level up,
yep.
You know, that whole real estate business.
So we got a few minutes. Tracy, can you tell us in a couple minutes, you know, a little bit about what the heck happened at the Dolores River Brewery?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And just full disclosure, I have talked to the owner of the Dolores River
Mark,
Brewery.
Yeah,
yes,
my friend
Mark.
Yep,
Mark.
I know Mark.
Yep.
Yes, I know Mark as well. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
I'm Mark. And it's Mark with a K, which is great. Mark with C. You have to keep an eye on them.
So I'm going to say this was probably between 2010 and 15. I don't know. Somewhere in there. I was leaving the pub through the front door on 4th Street. We were walking out from the bar. And if you picture the bar, so that you walk in, there's tables and such, but there's the bar that runs from in front of you to the right and then curves around towards the kitchen. And then there's the side of the bar where you can go order.
Right.
So I was.
This is the old bar we're talking about.
The original.
The original bar, right?
It's not the new building.
The new building, right?
The new building. No. This is which is still there. We still go there.
Sure.
And I, my partner and I were walking out the door, and I turned around to say goodbye, wave goodbye to people. And when I did, so there are stools along the bar there, and the closest that would be parallel to 4th Street. And sitting in a chair at the end of that bar was a man in jeans and a bluish, kind of faded blue plaid shirt. Looked very typical for Dolores, but he didn't have a head.
Oh.
And he was sitting in a way, like he was sitting with his, sitting on one stool with his legs across, like up across another stool, like he was stretched out. And he was sitting there, and I saw him, and I went, that was weird. And
oh, really?
I'm like, wait, what? And I turned, like, because I'm walking, I don't want to walk into the door, and I turned and I looked back, and he was still there. But he didn't have a head. And I just went, huh, that's odd. I think I just saw a ghost in the pub. And kind of just went, well, all right, bye, and walked out. And just went...
So was it? We just have a few seconds here, but was there like a gruesome headless? Was it?
No,
like,
he looked like a normal.
Okay, so
guy.
Wasn't like blood and gore.
No,
or no. Okay.
He just I couldn't see a head.
Okay,
but I could see him sitting on the stool with his legs extended out across the other stool, wearing jeans and this light blue plaid, like blue and white plaid shirt. And.
Yeah.
If he had had a head, I wouldn't have thought anything. I would have been like, oh, I don't think I know who that is.
Yeah.
At the time, I knew everybody in there most nights. And But he didn't have a head, so I don't know who it was. Couldn't identify
him.
But I have mentioned it to Mark, and I said, you know, and the pub, and he's like, oh, I know. Yeah. I know. Like, yeah, someday I'm going to have to, someday you're going to have to talk to him.
Yeah, I'll have to ask Mark about that one. Yeah. So... We have it.
You have to sleep over there.
Yeah. And
it won't be the first time.
Better than the dirt floor. Better than the dirt floor.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, the litter box.
Yeah. Anyway. So, Tracy, thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome.
We didn't even scratch the surface.
Oh, no.
I think we're going to have Tracy back for sure.
I think so, too. I've really enjoyed listening to what you have to say, Tracy.
Oh, I've got.
You have some adventures.
And we haven't even scratched the surface of some of the museum and archaeology stuff.
Oh, no, we didn't even. I have another full page that I didn't even get to.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
And you Canyoneers, we appreciate you tuning in as always. Keep listening. Give us the thumbs up. Remember, we're both on KSJG and on Spotify. And just remember, out here in the canyons, not all footsteps are yours. See you later. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Tracy.
Yep, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
The mesas grow silent. The shadows retreat. But the whispers remain. This has been the Dark Canyon Chronicles. Join me, Stephen, next time as we journey once more into the strange, the hidden, and the haunted. Reminding you that's what forgotten is never truly gone.